Welcome, listeners, to another live broadcast of Patheia Radio, brought to you via findingvoicesradio.com. My name is Johan Oldenkamp, and I'm the host of this radio talk show. The date of today is September 16, 2015, and we have a really special guest this episode. Of course, we always have a special guest, but I'm really pleased that he's the guest of this episode, because his name is Paul Pantone. Paul, please welcome into the show.
Thank you very much, Johan.
Yeah, I think you are a really important researcher on the field of alternative energy, and we're going to talk about that in this broadcast for long, I think. But before we go into the technical subjects, maybe you can give us a little bit of background of what kind of human being you are. What have you done in your life so far before you started with GEET?
Oh, I'm writing a book on it right now. I just finished my first book on the science.
Okay.
Now I'm writing the book about who I am. And I was born in 1950. By the time I was 5 years old, my mother was teaching me things that I would never learn in school, such as how to interpret your own dreams. She taught me that there were seven kinds of dreams and how they work and why. So I would wake up and I would know things that I would be doing later. So instead of having a deja vu, I would already know what it was I'm supposed to do, and if I chose not to do it, I could do something different. So I've been teaching people for years now about dreams and visions. Many of the inventions that I haven't even built yet, I dreamt of when I was 5, 6, 7 years old.
Whoa.
And most of us think, oh, that was just a dream. Well, if you blow off all the knowledge God gives you, then you can only get the knowledge man offers. And I wanted the knowledge God gives.
Yes, beautiful. I didn't expect to talk about spirituality with you, Paul, but I'm really happy that you bring us in. Great, yeah, that's great, because it gives a really extra dimension to your fascinating work.
Well, one of the things I just wrote in the book a few minutes ago, in one of the chapters, is I used to have dreams that I always had a clock next to my bed. Mm-hmm. So when I go to bed, I know it's 10:05 or 10:10, whatever time it is. And when I wake up, I look immediately at the clock. And sometimes I'd only be asleep 20 or 30 minutes, but in my dream, I'd lived weeks. So I knew every way possible to make a magnetic motor that didn't work, but I only woke up from my dream once I built it, and I knew how to make it work. So I didn't really care at that time about all the failures. I only drew out the final version of how to build one. So here I was at 5 and 6 years old, knowing things about surgery, many fields of energy that I wouldn't understand until I was 30 or 40 years old or older.
Whoa, at age of six,
yeah.
That's remarkable. Yeah.
Well, I remember one of my dreams, I was only 5 years old, and my mom came into the room. She saw the light was on, and she said, "What are you doing?" And I was drawing pictures. She said, "What is that?" I said, "Well, this is the human brain. It's got an upper section, a lower section. Here's the spine. And by doing a simple coma surgery, we can take a person in a type 1 or type 2 coma and reverse the process, and it takes about 20 minutes, and a person is no longer in a coma. But you can also use the same procedure to take a quadriplegic or a paraplegic out of their condition and give them full use of their body again."
If my son, when he was 6 years old, would tell me that, I don't know how I would have responded, but...
mom patted me on the head and said, "Well, keep drawing, son." And she left the room because she didn't know what to say.
Yeah, but I think that's really a good way to deal with it, because it's actually mind-blowing. Such an incredible gift.
The problem was, because of the knowledge I was gaining at such a young age, I didn't grow up like other kids did. I didn't want to play. I didn't want to go out and do sports. I wasn't interested in any of those things. I wanted to study. I wanted more education, more knowledge. But I knew I wasn't going to find it in a book. I had to meet every old person I could and sit down and pick their brains. So when other kids were out riding their bikes and playing and having a great time, for me, having a good time was sitting with some senior citizen saying, "What did you do wrong? If you could go back in life, what would you change?" You know what the number one answer was? "I hated my job."
Yeah.
And I sat there looking around going, "Wait a minute. If you hated your job, why did you do it?" I was fearful that I couldn't find a better job. The second most common answer was, I didn't like my spouse. That one really caught me off guard, because here they had 5 or 10 kids, and I'd be looking at them going, well, you didn't love your spouse. No. Then why'd you stay? Because I knew I couldn't do any better. It was always the fear that they couldn't do any better that kept them doing the same thing day after day. They had no courage.
Exactly. Yeah, and we all know that fear is not a really good advisor.
It keeps you under control.
Yes. So you decided to not make those two mistakes?
Oh, there were many things I learned that I decided I didn't want to make any of the mistakes that I was hearing about. One of the most horrible ones, and I wanted to cry when I heard it, was the number three answer to all those senior citizens was their kids. The kids never turned out the way mom and dad wanted. Well, the kids have free spirit. How much guidance do you give your children? Most parents say to the children, talk, say mama, say daddy. The minute they start talking, they say, shut up. What kind of communication is that?
Yeah.
They don't encourage it. I've met more European families where they encourage the children to get involved in adult conversation. So when I was growing up, I wanted my kids with me during all my meetings. When I was going to work, I wanted my sons to come. I wanted them to know how to use tools. When my youngest boy was only 6 years old, I gave him a jigsaw, a hammer, a pouch, basic tools. And I showed him how to use them safely. Well, his friends would all see him reaching for tools, and they'd be going, well, is your dad going to get mad? Oh, no, these are my tools. And the kids would all be surprised, like, your dad buys you power tools and sanders? Well, yeah. Doesn't yours? No.
No.
But to me, if you do not allow that brain to develop and teach it from a young age, you can create anything you believe you can. Then they're only going to believe the bull they're taught in school. That if it isn't in their science book, it can't be done.
Yeah, and that's limiting your world, your mind, your reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was your blessing. You were outside of that system long before you even entered.
Yes.
And they never got you back into the box.
Well, when I got to ninth grade, I was so bored, I finally got up one day and walked out. And the teacher told me to sit down, and I said, I quit. Well, you can't quit. You've got to finish school. I said, no, I don't. You haven't taught me anything since I got here, so I'm leaving.
Oops.
And I walked out. Now, I wouldn't recommend that for too many people, because most people wouldn't know how to survive.
No.
But what you learn in a book, it limits everything you do. And if you believe that's the only truth, then stay in school.
Yes, yes. So how did the story continue? Did the school teacher came to your mother and told her that you actually forced by law to be in school, or was he?
They went to my mom, and my mother informed them that I had left home that year. I was supporting myself, living on my own, and if I didn't want to go to school, well, that was between them and me.
Okay.
She had nothing else to do with it.
That's.
But she
thing.
Also laughed at him, saying, "I don't think there's anything you can teach my son."
Yeah.
And so, my mom, for challenges to me when I was 10, 11 years old, my mom would go to these stores that sell old furniture and old junk, and she would buy all these old clocks that didn't work and TVs that didn't work and radios. And she'd get them for 50 cents or a dollar each, come home, put them on the table and say, here, fix them. And nobody ever trained me how to do it. I just took them apart, put them back together, and they worked fine.
Whoa, incredible.
So, yeah. So I helped the family make money. And I did it because I love my mom and I wanted the education on how to fix these things.
Yeah. So you were your own teacher for most part.
I had to be.
Yeah.
Because the answers I was looking for, I couldn't find in the books.
No.
And when it came to the big invention, which is why I'm popular right now, the GEAT, guaranteed none of it was in a book. That's why I had to write the first science book, which is now available on my website and through Amazon. But the book didn't exist. They didn't know what plasma physics was until the year I built the first working unit. But scientists, when they first said plasma exists, they were going about it backwards. And right now, 99% of them are still doing it backwards.
Can you tell us a little bit about the basics of about plasma generation and
well,
behind it?
According to the books in the science world, you have to compress a gas and then charge it with electron particles before it's released, and then you release the plasma particles. With mine, I use a vapor in a vacuum, which means it'll boil at a lower temperature. And then I take that vapor, I feed it up the center of the exhaust pipe or chimney, and then I feed that into the combustion area. And after it is atomically broken down into plasma, you have zero pollution. The problem is, zero pollution is not politically correct in any country. The minute you have achieved zero pollution, you're already going to get over five times your mileage. Now, here in the United States, it is against the law. And in most other countries, they have laws and rules that the government has to approve what's on your car. So to stay within the political guidelines, yes, we do sell plans and we tell people how to do it, but I'm not selling any more kits. The last time I tried to sell kits, I ended up in jail for 3.5 years.
Yeah, I read about that. Must have been a horrible experience. Because
well,
it was, yeah.
I have to laugh about it now. Sure, they took out all my teeth. So now I have to eat a lot of softer foods. Both my legs, one leg is broken, the other one's fractured. So I can't put a lot of weight on. So I can't get fat. If I start to get fat, I got to quit eating a little bit so that I keep my weight right so I can even walk. So maybe in some ways they did hurt me emotionally, mentally, but it made me a lot stronger. And even recently, I just got robbed again. Most people, if you lost everything you own today, would feel destitute. You wouldn't know where to go, where to start. But as long as I have brain matter between my ears, I don't worry about it. I can start over anywhere in the world at any time, and I can become very rich again very quick. People all over the world want better mileage. They want less pollution. They want a healthy life. The cough I have right now is caused by a chemical problem in soil. I was driving through some fields in California, and they have a product in this country called Monsanto Roundup.
Yeah, I know about it.
Oh, you do? Okay, well, if you breathe the dust that has any kind of fungus in it, the fungus starts growing in your lung, and there is no cure.
Yeah, I think there's the most horrible company on this planet, Monsanto.
Well, I was told that people at my age that get this normally only last about 6 months. So I've been bucking it now for 6 years. The problem with most people is they can't cough it back out of their lungs. It builds up and fills your lungs with water, and you don't get oxygen. You die. If they would learn how to cough it up quickly, it wouldn't suffocate them.
Okay, so that's what you're doing. Every time you feel something, you cough it up.
You got it.
Okay.
And by doing that, my lungs stay pretty clean, and I have to put some kind of irritant into them once in a while. Sometimes I just open the freezer up and take a blast of ice-cold air. And boy, will I cough after that for a minute or two.
Okay.
So there are ways of helping to get rid of it, but I have not been able to cure it yet.
Okay, and what about colloidal silver water or colloidal silver?
Ah, yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people have sworn by the colloidal silver, and I've tried it internally a very small amount. I was not pleased with the results one way or the other. Maybe it works for some people and doesn't for others, and I found a lot of products are that way. Mm-hmm. No one thing is perfect. Not GEAT. No one product is the absolute fix-all. So what I found is when I had a MRSA infection, if I put colloidal silver on the surface of the skin that was eaten up, it grew back within 3 days. And it killed the MRSA infection. But it is still not being done by any doctor anywhere in the world that I know of. But I do a lot of things a little different. When I first got out of that hospital, they told me I had COPD, and I had hepatitis C, and I had herpes, and I would probably be dead in 4 to 6 months. And I thanked them for their opinion. I immediately went home and took colloidal silver. I applied that on a cloth to my chest. I took some cinnamon oil and clove oil and put 10 drops each in my coffee. And I took one capsule, 500 milligram, of milk thistle. And after 10 days, I went in for a blood test. And the doctor said, Mr. Pantone, you are in excellent health. What are you doing?
Wow.
I said, well, what about all these problems? He said, you don't have any problems. Good Lord, you're in perfect health.
Yeah, beautiful, Paul, because that shows that you really take your life into your own hands and that you study every subject you need to know in order to get result, either it's health or it's a magnetic device or the geet. So,
because you do a science show, you'll really appreciate this, because I do see doctors all the time. They come in as students.
At your work?
They come to me to learn my technology and how to cure their patients, but it's against the law to cure them. So what we do is we let the patients speak for themselves. And I can't say, I can only tell you I was cured of something I had. I cannot say it'll cure you. That would be against the law. But if I was doing a show and I want to promote a doctor, I could have all the patients that that doctor has seen be on my show. And one after another, they can all say, I took this product, and lo and behold, I don't have that problem anymore. So we have found ways around the medical association. But I believe the medical association in Europe is far more advanced than it is in this country.
Yeah, but the people here think the other way. So I think that so-called medical association, as you call it, I use more, doesn't really matter.
There's a lot to be learned.
Yeah, they're not really on top of things, actually.
That's true in all the fields. If you were to file a complaint with the psychiatrist, it's going to be heard by a psychiatric board. If you file a complaint against the judge, it'll be heard by fellow judges. If you file a complaint against policemen, it's heard by policemen. I'm sorry, let's put together unbiased people who are not part of that profession. Let's get some real, honest-to-God values in here. They aren't there anymore. That's like saying, let the wolf judge wolves when they attack the sheep. Oh, no, we're not guilty of eating any sheep.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's a beautiful metaphor, because that's actually the whole truth here.
Yeah.
They will not convict someone from stealing a chicken or an egg, because that's what they do.
Yeah. But I try to keep it simple. And when I'm talking with people with PhDs and MDs and different medical and physics degrees, I try to explain to them, I do not look at science any different than I do carpentry or anything else. If you look from the sidelines, you can see everything that they're all doing. If you're focused like a doctor just on your field, you can't see anything around you. You're too focused. Yeah. And now in America, they want everyone focused on one small part. And that's all you're supposed to know, is that one small part. We want you to be an expert in that one small part. I'd much rather have a full, rounded education in all fields. I want to know health. I want to know agriculture. I want to understand science, space. When I started getting on stage 25 years ago telling people that we are going around the Milky Way, and here is what's going to happen. By the end of 2015, we're going to see asteroids coming in much quicker than we've ever seen. We're going to see plate tectonics and earthquakes and other problems, but it isn't global warming. It is a natural function that occurs every 25,800 years. And as you explain this, a lot of people will argue. But then when you start handing them proof from the National Geographic and different associations around the world that don't compare notes. There's no single group that puts it all together. They each study their own field of science by themselves. And holding your knowledge to your chest is not going to help mankind.
No.
You need to be able to share the knowledge you have with others so that you can find the better ways.
I'm really happy.
I have interviewed probably 1,500 inventors that have come to me saying they have a great invention. I will give each and every one of them the same time frame to show me it works. If you can convince me your product works, I'll stand beside you. And because of that, I've had investor groups call up and say, hey, Paul, would you check out this guy and tell me what you think? It breaks my heart to say that a lot of the guys who claim to be inventors aren't inventors. They saw something somewhere, they copied it, and they don't even know why it works.
Yeah. I see that too. And they all think they hit the jackpot and they will become billionaire. But that's not the real motivation or the correct intention behind it, because it's actually, you do it for mankind, not for your own wallet.
Well, I gave away the plans on JL Nod Insight in France in 1999. I said I was expecting the Prince of Kuwait to show up. The King of Saudi Arabia wanted to find out if my technology worked, and if so, they needed to buy it up so mankind would never see it. So when I heard they were coming over to visit with me, I gave away the small plans on that site. It cost me about $50,000 to $60,000 a year in lost sales from selling the small plans, but it got it out worldwide. Millions of people have downloaded those plans. When the King of Saudi Arabia and his son heard what I had done, at first they were very upset.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you really don't want to get upset with somebody that bad, because they can get a lot of things done you don't like. But when I got them there at my house, I said, now, here's the deal. You leave me alone, and I will not release the plans on how to run everything on the planet on water. Oh, by the way, if I do, you'll never sell another drop of oil. All of a sudden, I had their attention.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And you cannot believe that was the longest prayer I have ever heard, when the Prince of Kuwait got up and bowed his head and prayed to Allah that I live for as many hundred years as possible. Please have a long life.
Because if you would die, the knowledge would be open by your will or something?
Yes.
Okay.
It is to be given to all of mankind.
Okay, so the moment you pass on, so to say, automatically it will become public.
Yes.
Okay, that's a really good life insurance. Whoa, impressive.
But I also have a stipulation in there. It may never be patented.
Great, yeah, I like that very
My
much.
My family holds a copyright on all that knowledge. It can only be used for personal use, not for commercial gain.
I think that's a really important clause there, Paul, because that patenting has been done so much trouble for mankind, because most of those great inventions all went into drawers and they never got into use again, because some greedy big companies didn't want improvement, real improvement.
That's correct. That has been stopping inventions for years. The other thing that stops inventions is people don't understand inventors. Inventors have what I call inventor syndrome. It's a condition mentally that if you have invented, pick up something on your desk right now and think for a minute, you are the inventor of that item.
Okay.
And it's yours. You own it. It's your baby. It's much like a mother would feel about her newly born baby. Is she going to just hand that out to somebody? No. That's her baby.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to protect that baby and keep that baby close, for about 17 years, just like a patent. So the chances of any real inventor getting something out in that first 17 years is pretty slim. Big corporations realize they have this problem. All they have to do is wait until your patent expires, and the next day they can go into production. So in my case, fine, my patent's all expired. Oh, by the way, my copyright doesn't for another 120 years.
Okay.
So it can't be repatented. Even if you made a 50% change, if you're using any part of the drawings that are copyrighted in my science book, you're infringing on our rights. So without a license, we can close your doors. I wanted to make sure no government or oil company could come in, steal the technology, and put it on a shelf.
Beautiful.
So if it is basically owned by all of mankind, I'm acting no more than a shepherd for the technology.
Yeah, you really thought this through, Paul. I'm really glad about that.
So it doesn't matter if I live in a shack or a big mansion. I don't really care. But when I gave away the plans and all the money that went with it, I also put a note at the very bottom. If any of you who have built one of these feel a need to help me, I would appreciate any donation. And what's funny is the only place I got a donation in the United States was out of California. It was a $5 donation. In Europe, I got a $100 donation. But when I was arrested, $20,000 was raised in Europe and only a few hundred in the United States to help me with legal. So that told me a lot about the people in different countries. The Europeans feel in their heart much stronger than the people here did.
Yeah, maybe it was the alternative media, but I also saw the message and I was really touched by it, because I think it's completely ludicrous that a really inventious guy like you is put into a mental hospital for no particular reason at all. That's at least how I understood the case. And I think
they've been doing it this way for 100 years here. Thank God it wasn't 100 years ago when they take out brains and say, you need a frontal lobotomy. Things have changed here. Now they just want to put you on drugs so that you don't remember who you are and you can't remember your invention. I fought it. The way I fought it was real simple. The day I got to that hospital, I started getting one guard after another off to the side. And I asked them what kind of an engine they may have available. Lawnmower, motorcycle, car, anything. And I started giving them free plans, telling them how to build it. And they went off at home and built them. And one after another, the guards came back with their thumbs up going, man, I put it on my motorcycle. I put it on my dad's generator. I put it on a motorhome. I can pee in the gas tank now. I had to tell all of them what they were doing was illegal. They all had a surprised look on their face. What do you mean it's illegal? It's against the law in the United States to have zero pollution if it means you're getting better mileage.
So then they realized the system was not really, how to say.
When the guards would stand between me and the doctors and say, you're not giving him a shot.
Okay.
Leave him alone. He's a political prisoner.
Which is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's how you survived those, 3.5 years?
3.5 years.
Whoa.
According to the law in Utah, they couldn't legally hold me for more than 1.5 years. And the attorney general was saying it was all the judge that did it. And the judge was saying, no, it wasn't. It was you. The attorney general's office did this. I didn't do it. But when you're fighting the system, you can't win.
No, it's very tough.
So I figured rather than suing them, I was going to get on with life. Why try to play Don Quixote and hit the windmill? No, thank you. I have better things to do. There's people out there that do want fresh air. There's people out there, I'm sure in your area, that would like to have a heater that for less than $100 a year, you can heat your home.
they most certainly do. I think half of this planet want that.
Well, everybody north of the equator, yeah. If you get far enough away from the equator, yes. When you get down to the equator, they don't want heat. They want cold. So mm-hmm. we're trying to teach every technology we can on how it fits in your neighborhood, your backyard. We're trying to teach people how to turn plastic into fuel. Gasoline, diesel, and kerosene come from plastic when you heat it up. It's learning how to build that unit where it's inexpensive. We teach people, and you can build one at home for about $300 to $400 and process all your own plastic. Turn it back into fuel. Or you can buy the machine. It's available by a big company out of Japan. And for $10,000, you can make 1 pint per hour. With ours, you can make about 4 gallons an hour.
Wow.
So we teach people how to use plastic and glass and lawn clippings. Lawn clippings, when in a sealed container with a vacuum on it, will create enough heat to heat your home 9 months out of the year. Okay. So that's all part of buying the plans. So when people buy the plans, they get my personal help for things they need to do for themselves. Now, the things you might need to do aren't going to be things that are needed down in Africa. So every area has different needs. I have to customize my classes for each person.
Yes, that makes sense. Okay, can we talk about the websites? Because I think there's a geetinternational.com and a geetfriends.net. Maybe there are more websites, but which website do you recommend?
Geetfriends.net is a private party. I don't even know who put that up, but they put that up and got copies of everything that happened to me when they persecuted and prosecuted me. And there are pictures of me a week before I was arrested with all my teeth in great health. And I used to be able to play basketball if I wanted to, 3 hours a day, or run track, or whatever I wanted. Within 6 months of being in jail, I wasn't able to walk. I was put in a wheelchair. They drilled out every tooth in my head. And the progressive pictures are on that site. So if you want to see what hell is, go to geetfriends.net. If you want to see what we're doing today, a little bit more of an update and a lot more upbeat, you go to geetinternational.com. And we're putting all the links. As soon as we have your link for the archive show, we'll put that up.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a few years since I looked at who was there. But the last time I printed out a list of who was on my website, about one-third of all of the people looking at my website were universities and military. I am not welcome at any military base or university. If you get caught with a geet on your vehicle and you're at a university, you'll be asked to leave or they'll confiscate the vehicle. We've had kids that are 10 and 12 years old put it on small engines for science fairs. And as long as the teacher doesn't know what they're doing and they just bring the engine in, they can get away with it. But then when the kids start that engine up and it's only running on Windex, pickle juice, we call it fun fuel. Then the teachers get really excited until they find out it's against the law.
Yeah, completely crazy.
So I am here as an educator, and not all people need the same things. So I've had to learn all different fields, from science to theology. And it's kind of fun when you come to one of my bigger classes. I usually only hold a couple a year where there'll be 30 to 40 people in the class. But when you show up, you might find a Buddhist, Hindus, priests from every religion, and they all get along like brothers. They never raise their voice to each other. They're passing wrenches back and forth. We've had Amish in there at the same time, NASA physicists. They're all there in the same room, and they all act like they're just students in a fifth grade class having fun. Anything is possible if you put your mind to it. And everything at one point or another is an invention. Everything you can buy was invented by someone. Sometimes the improvements are just engineers who can make it look pretty. Doesn't mean it's any different than what is originally. if you look back at Nikola Tesla in the late 1800s, mm-hmm. when he had his first radio-controlled boat out on the water, and everybody was sitting there trying to figure out how are they controlling this boat? It's going all over the place. It's making turns. And he's sitting way over on a bench controlling his boat. So we think all of this stuff is new. No, it isn't. I was told 37 years ago that what I invented with GEET was 50 to 100 years ahead of where mankind is. And I really thought that scientist was full of bull. But now, I think he was pretty accurate. Science does not want to admit it made mistakes. They don't want to admit that there is something that is so simple they can't understand it.
No, and I think, Paul, don't leave their spouse or don't quit their job.
I have started playing with egos. I started having fun with some of these scientists because they all came in with their big egos saying, well, have you done this test or that test? Have you done a stoichiometric blah, blah, blah test? And I would listen to them day after day, same questions. So when I started going to the big conferences where there'd be 400, 500 scientists in the same room, mm-hmm. I would print out a list of 25 to 30 different inventions or tests, and I would pass it out at the door. So these are the tests we're going to be doing with GEET in the next year or two. If there's anything I've missed, please let me know. In the middle of the page, I made up things that don't exist. And all these scientists would be looking at this list, and they get to the middle of the page and their eyes would freeze. And you'd see them looking around. None of them wanted to have their ego destroyed. So they'd all say, oh, yeah, that looks really good. Yeah, that's exactly what I do.
This is the story of the emperor who has no clothes on. It's beautiful.
You got it.
Yeah.
So if you can put them in their place quickly, they do not object to what you're doing. And their heads start nodding up and down like little bobbits, going, yep, yep, that, it makes sense, it makes sense. Because all of their colleagues are saying it makes sense, they all shake their head. It's pretty sad that ego gets in their way.
Yes.
I quit going to doctors years ago when I'd go to the doctors and tell them what the problem was, and they'd look at me and say, oh, well, let's try this. And I'd look at them and go, what do you mean, try this? I want something that's going to fix the problem. Is that going to do it or not? Well, we won't know until we try it. Well, I'm not going to try anything. If you can't tell me it works, why would I want to try something?
Yeah.
Oh. But it's like when I got out of the hospital, I went to a doctor's office in Oklahoma. And I walked in, and I said, I'd like to get a blood test done. And they said, well, you can't just come in and get a blood test. You have to see the doctor, and the doctor has to order a blood test. So I pulled $100 out of my pocket, and I threw it up on the counter. I slammed it down good and hard. I said, then let me see a damn doctor now. Well, the doctor heard it from the back of the office, and he come running up to the front with his assistant, and she said, what's the problem? And I looked at the doctor. I said, can you look at me and tell me if I have herpes or hepatitis C? And they looked at each other going, no. Why? I said, then why the hell would I want to see you? I came in to get a blood test. So the next time I come in, you can tell me what the blood test says, because you're not going to give me a copy of the blood test. You need to feel important. And you think everybody's an idiot and can't read the damn report. So can we just get a blood test today?
Okay. And then? What happened?
They looked at the nurse and said, get a sample of his blood and send it in. They took the blood sample, sent it in at no charge. The next time I came in, they knew the results, and that's when they told me there was nothing wrong with me.
Okay.
So the doctor was confused. Why would you come in if you're in perfect health? Then I opened my folder up and I said, because all these other idiots told me how sick I was.
Hmm.
And they're looking at all these reports going, well, according to these blood tests, you had all this wrong with you. how could your blood test show you're healthy? I said, well, it's because I know how much clove oil, cinnamon, and milk thistle to take. Well, what are those? Doctors have no clue what herbs are and what they're for. When they had me locked up and they drilled out every tooth in my head, I had a friend that was sneaking cloves into me. Have you seen cloves before?
No, sorry.
It's a small plant, an herb, with a little stick on it and a little clover on top, like. It's all brown. And you put one of those in your gum, C-L-O-V-E. And you stick that in there, and after a few minutes, it is an antibiotic. It immediately starts removing the infection, and because it numbs the area like Novocaine, you have no more pain. So even if you had 28 abscesses at the same time, you can smile without pain.
Wow, that's incredible.
Well, some of these guards would come in, and they'd be holding their cheek. Oh, I need to take the day off. I hurt. And I'd walk over and hand them one and say, here, don't tell anybody where you got it, but stick this in your gum between the cheek and the gum. Your pain will go away in about 5 minutes. 5-10 minutes later, they call me over and say, hey, thanks, bud. That really helped.
Great.
But
yeah,
they're used to taking painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
Painkillers alter your brain waves. They don't get rid of the problem.
No, they only stop the signaling function, but not the cause.
You got it.
Yeah. Can I ask why did they pull your teeth, Paul? Was that just a way to humiliate you or to punish you? Or?
It was a torture process. If we pull all your teeth out, that isn't going to work. But if we drill them all out hollow like they did and then say we're not going to fill them unless you sign your patent over.
Okay, this is
horrible. And I said, I'm not going to. I'll go to my grave without teeth. But you're not getting the patent. It belongs to mankind, and I will not give it to the Mormon Church. So, go to hell.
That's a clear answer. Where did they cut this technique from? From Guantanamo Bay? Or?
Yes, I believe so.
That's horrible.
But they thought it was going to make me crack. And then when I couldn't walk anymore and my foot was all mangled up, I started crawling down the hallway. And that's when they got me a wheelchair and said, oh, hell, put him in a wheelchair. They didn't know what else to do. It's like, no matter what we do to this guy, we lock him up for 90 days without seeing anyone. Won't let him talk to anybody. Total isolation. Nothing breaks this guy. What is wrong?
I think Hollywood should make a film about you, Paul, because it will be a really tough film. I've seen some ones, but your story is even more impressive.
Well, you never get more than you can handle.
That's true.
If you believe that, then no one's going to be able to ever hurt you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really powerful insight.
You have to believe. If you do not believe in yourself, then you've lost the whole battle. You will live in fear.
Exactly. But when you turn it upside down and you do believe in yourself, then there's nothing that can bring you down. So that's what you've been showing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every religion that I studied had truth to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked for all the truth I could find that I could scientifically back up, I found they were all truthful. In the best words they had available at the time.
Yes.
We just didn't comprehend what they were trying to say.
No.
So when Ezekiel spoke of the chariot that came from the north was a flying saucer. And he described 8 different inventions in that chariot. Wow, one of them's a geet. I now have all 8 of those inventions. And all 8 of them put together, and you could easily power a ship out of this galaxy in a heartbeat. I mean, it's no big deal. It's all common sense. But people don't know what common sense is anymore.
No, they have put some nonsense in their brain. And they learned that at school, and that's blocking the common sense.
Yeah. So if people want to get a hold of me on my phone number, they can reach me direct. Just go to my site at GEETInternational.com, or sometimes it'll say RebuildingGEETInternational.com. That's the same site. And I answer all my emails. I answer my calls when they come in, unless I'm on a radio show. And we teach people. We have plans. We're working with a lot of different ministry groups right now. Some of them are coming to me asking, is there a cure or anything we can do for people with malaria? And I have forwarded them information. There are many people that are doing things like that, but it's against the law in most countries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad. Here in America, I've seen a lot of websites that were changed where people one day will say, this is great, and the next day it says, it's horrible. People tend to do what they're told by their government. So yeah. If the government says, pull that site down, it gets pulled down.
Yeah, I know that, Paul. But to me, the government is not a lawful institution to have anything to do with
when
it.
When I first put the book up for sale, when I first put the Geet book up for sale, we sold about 100 books the first day. And it's gone way down since then. Some days now I'm lucky to sell one a week. I mean, it just the sales went way down. It's like the people who truly are interested in health and clean air, they immediately jump on it when they hear it. The others who would much rather buy a concert ticket or buy chrome wheels for the car, oh, that's really important. Some of them have to go to a soccer game. That's much more important than paying their rent or their utilities. So we all have priorities in our life.
Yes.
And I found that a lot of people feel that giving donations to Greenpeace or the Red Cross or whatever organization is a great thing to do. Wake up. The money never gets where it's going. It buys jets. It buys fancy boats. It buys fancy cars. And those people make sure a little bit of the money does go to where it's supposed to. If you want to help through some of these organizations, find out who needs the help and go hand them the money. If you want to clean up the planet, find an inventor and sponsor him. Make sure the money gets to where it's got to go. Don't give it to a university thinking, oh, we're going to help mankind by donating this money for R&D at a university. No, you're going to spend your money making sure it stays in R&D forever. Universities don't want success. They want that donation every year, and they want more equipment every year.
Yeah, they just want continuity. They want to keep existing, but they don't really do science or research or inventions. That's not their business. Their business is getting money out of the population.
It's all about money.
It's all about money. It's true.
Yeah. One of the discoveries, which I have highlighted in my book, was during one of our tests, a student was running his engine outside our back door, and water was running over the bottom board of the engine that the engine's bolted to, and it was forming tornadoes. And I saw the tornadoes, and I said, wow, I wonder if we can control a tornado. Well, I spent about 40 minutes playing with the tornadoes, and I found out I could kill a tornado in just a matter of a second or two. And it's explained in the book, if you ground out a tornado, it stops. The same thing with a hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the knowledge today to stop all this damage, to adjust it, but we don't use our head. We don't want to. We want history to repeat itself. So when millions of people get wiped out because of a tsunami, it isn't because they asked for it. It was because they didn't think they could do anything. So they stayed sitting next to the beach looking at the water until the wave came in. If you know something bad's going to happen, go to a different area. I see it all the time when they say, well, we expect an earthquake to hit here or a volcano to blow up here, and the people will stand at the bottom of the mountain looking up to film it. And as the lava is coming down and the ash is covering them, they go, oh, it's too late to run. Yeah? But you chose to be there. So now you don't have the right to complain. Here in America, I've heard many times just in the last few months, I don't vote. But so-and-so is doing a rotten job. Well, if you aren't going to get out and vote, don't complain. I mean, you got to have your voice heard. And if it's not being heard, then you voted for the wrong person. Change it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet most people are afraid. They're afraid to change jobs. They're afraid to look outside their marriage for maybe a counselor. How do you put the spark back into a marriage? Well, it takes two. And if you dissolve your marriage over a 20-year period, you're not going to fix it in one day.
No.
So if you realize that you were in love with her 20 years ago, what were you doing for her 20 years ago that you're not now? How long did you push her away before she finally just said, it isn't worth chasing you? Or vice versa. Maybe she was pushing you away. And if she was, why the heck did you stay? Most people do not know how to leave a bad relationship. And inventors have that same problem. They get in bed with some guy as far as a business venture, and they don't get along. So instead of saying, well, let's work this out, they start swinging at each other. And it doesn't do any good. No. At the end of the day, you're still partners. Mm-hmm. So to help an inventor, you want to find out who the inventor is and support him locally. Make sure he has food on the table, a roof over his head, and give him a little help once in a while. You'll find that that inventor will give you the shirt off his back if he thinks you're doing that for him. But most inventors don't feel that way. They feel that everybody's out there to try to grab their invention and run with it. Don't try to grab it. Let him offer it. And if you're treating him like a decent human being, which he's not used to, he is going to offer it. He'll offer a lot more.
Yeah.
So what field, what is your favorite field of science?
Yeah, my favorites. What you said in the beginning was really touching me, because I'm also studying everything. The current paradigm is divide and conquer, so that everybody is a specialist in hardly anything. And I do the very opposite. I connect everything, just like you said. So I call it holy science, the science of the whole. And
yeah.
And I connect all the things from quantum mechanics to spirituality, psychology, philosophy. I study everything. My background is in psychology. But just like you, an autodidact. I also find my way. I don't have the dreams you have and the insights, but I'm just a really stubborn searcher. So I'll find my answer anyway. And by now I have written 33 books about what I call holy science. And I don't think that was the last one. I'm writing a new one as well. So that's my thing, just connecting the science. So I'm not an engineer like you, and I'm not an inventor. I'm working with words and concepts and trying to get to understand the whole of reality.
I wish you'd have said this sooner, because we could have gone into so many different fields. It's not funny, but my favorite one to share with psychologists is I did have to see a psychiatrist years ago to prove that I was competent enough and qualified enough to raise my own son. There was question as to why I would give a 5 or 6 year old boy hammers and saws and let him buy his own house at 6 years old. I mean, there was questions as to why a parent would do these things. So I started seeing the psychiatrist, and he asked me what my love life was like. And I said, oh, well, I'm living with so-and-so right now. And he said, well, how'd you meet her? I said, oh, my last girlfriend. He's, okay, and how did you meet your last girlfriend? Through my last girlfriend. I don't have time to go shopping. So he kept asking me, how did you meet each one of these women? And I said, oh, they've always introduced me from one to the next. If it doesn't work out, the girl goes out of her way to find me a replacement. Well, he was laughing.
Yeah.
And he said, well, our session is over for the day, but Mr. Pantone, you do have some psychological problems, because it is common human nature to be mad at your spouse when you break up. And if you still do have feelings, you aren't going to go out of your way to find them a replacement. That's absolutely insane. I'll see you next Thursday. Well, the next Thursday I showed up with five girls. Oh, did we have fun with him?
I can imagine. Whoa.
I introduced him to my wife and the girl before her and the girl before her and the girl before her and the girl before her. And he sat there with his mouth open. And finally it dawned on him, I was telling him the truth. He said, you went out of your way to find a replacement. Yeah. And you still love him. Well, of course. And you went out of your way to find a replacement, and you still love him. Uh-huh. He finally got down to my wife, and he says, how do you feel about being in the same room with four other women that love your husband? And she leaned over and looked at all four of them and said, thank you for keeping him single until I got here.
Boy, you rocked his world.
I did.
Yeah.
He said in the 50 years that he's been writing books and studying psychology, I opened his eyes more than any other patient. And from then on, I'd come to the sessions with him, and mm-hmm. he'd be asking questions totally opposite of what a psychiatrist would. What would you do if this is a problem? And I'd tell him solutions. Well, we haven't tried that. Maybe that'll work. I look at everything from a totally different perspective, my own. But which one was telling the truth, or were they all telling the truth, when Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were sitting in that boat? Did Jesus walk on the water? Did he float on the water? Did he just appear next to the boat? Or did he not show up at all? It depends on your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So we can all see the same thing, but we don't see the same thing. What do you absorb? We all absorb something different. If you're seeking knowledge, you will find it. If you're not looking for the knowledge and it's laying in front of you, you'll step over it.
Yes, what you see is what you get. That's a very deep...
Yes.
Yeah. Great, great, great. Can I ask if the billing process with your psychologist or psychiatrist also changed in the sense that you're not...
Oh, I never got charged.
Oh, you did get charged. Well, maybe you should
charge for the first two visits. After that, never again.
Okay. Well, maybe it's an idea to charge him next time, but that's up to you.
No.
Yeah, great.
No, the gifts I have, if it's a knowledge that I feel I have to charge for, I do. But when it comes to how to raise a child better and do certain things, no, I do not charge for that. Okay. That is a gift.
Okay.
I would like to see parents getting along with their children better, playing new games with them, things they've never done before. And I've had a lot of people say their kids aren't that smart. And I've said, you want to make a $100 bet? Bring that child into this room. And then you go stand in the corner, get away from us. And I'll bet the kid $5 for every invention, or give the kid $5 for every invention they can come up with in a 10-minute period, but you got to be able to use it within this room. And it's got to be something I've never heard of or seen before. And a child, even on the first attempt, will always get at least one invention. There's something that irks them. When I did that to my youngest boy at 11 years old, he came up with 21 inventions in 10 minutes.
Wow.
And all of them would sell if you put them on the market today.
That's pure empowerment. Beautiful.
But he was only 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So now, he foot loose, he's fancy free. This week he's over there in Sri Lanka. Next week it may be over in India. He likes to travel and have fun.
Great. Good for him. Beautiful. Unfortunately, Paul, the time's up at the moment.
Yes.
There's a next show after this. Maybe there's a short word you want to say to the audience, and then we round it up.
Seek knowledge and you'll find it. And other than that, I'd have to say God bless.
Very powerful indeed. Thank you very much, Paul, for being such a beautiful guest here and sharing this delights insights of yours. Listeners,
anytime.
Thank you. Yeah, very, very happy with that. Listeners, thank you very much for listening to Pateo Radio. Next time, my guest is Michael Cremo. So if you want to hear him, tune in, same time, same frequency, and bye for now.